بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the most merciful. To all of our viewers out there, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. And thank you for joining us again in the intersection of faith and reason, where our guest is our beloved Dr. Sheikh Scholar, Dr. Ja'far Sheikh Idris. Dr. Ja'far, it's good to be with you again. And last time we were talking about the Quranic argument for the existence of God. And I believe you mentioned the verse in Surah At-Tur, أَمْ خُلِقُوا مِنْ غَيْرِ شَيْءٍ أَمْ هُمُ الْخَالِقُونَ.
Were they created out of nothing, or
did they create themselves? And he said, generally speaking, in your studies, observations that most atheists have fallen in one of these categories that the Quran has actually given.
Yes. And interesting. And I'm talking about contemporary ones.
Contemporary.
Scientists. Some of them scientists. No.
It sounds a bit ludicrous to me that somebody can actually argue saying that we came out of nothing.
Yes, I will show you some of the show some of the words
that they have actually promoted such an idea. Interestingly, you also said that in Greek philosophy earlier, they even said that there was an argument that the world is eternal and needs not a creator.
Yes, they thought that the heavenly bodies, because they know that the trees are not eternal, the water is not eternal, but they thought that the heavenly bodies
are eternal.
Were eternal, especially the sun. And their argument was that we haven't seen any change. In the sun has always been like this, so it must be eternal. Mm. And then I gave Al-Ghazali's objection to that, and he said that, how do you know? The sun is a huge body, and it is very far away. So if it diminishes by a small amount every day, you will not be able to realize this.
But we
now know that what Al-Ghazali said is true.
It's correct. No. I'm wondering if this is why people believe to worship the heavenly bodies.
Yes, of course, especially the people of Prophet Abraham, and his father and his people used to worship the heavenly bodies.
Mainly because they felt they were eternal.
But I think it could be.
Yeah. Interesting, interesting. Sheikh, we would love to hear some of these arguments.
Now I think we enumerated some of the pieces of evidence that Al-Ghazal, that Ibn Taymiyyah mentioned. Now we come to one of the most famous arguments for the existence of God. I mean famous among especially the philosophers. Mm-hmm. And it was famous even among the Muslim theologians and Christian and Jewish theologians. The argument took many forms, was formulated in many ways, and some of the formulations were wrong. So people thought that because the formulation is wrong, the argument is false. I will try now to give what I think is the correct form of the argument. The argument goes like this.
Sheikh, just to remind our viewers, Ibn Taymiyyah argues, or so far he has given three arguments, and that is, it is in the innate nature of humans to believe.
Yes.
And then he spoke about ayahs, or the signs. Now
it's a cosmological argument.
Cosmological argument.
He says that there is a difference between the cosmological and the ayah, as I said last time. That the ayah points to God directly. The cosmological argument comes to the conclusion that there must be a creator or an eternal cause also. So he said that it is good as far as it goes, but it doesn't go far enough. And I will comment on that, inshallah. The argument is like this. It says there are temporal things. Temporal things that have a beginning. Mm-hmm. This is something temporal. It was not there. It is now there.
Okay.
But a temporal thing must have an external cause. It cannot create itself.
Sure.
Okay. Now, it cannot create itself, though it has an external cause. Now, the external cause cannot be itself temporal.
Sure.
Because we'll ask the same question about it.
About the cause itself, the external cause.
No. Sure. But some people said, why not? Why not? They said that we can say that, for example, if we say that temporal thing one, is caused by temporal thing
two,
which is caused by temporal thing
three,
and so on to infinity. So they said, well, what is wrong with this? The series need not end anywhere. So that they said that the cosmological argument doesn't prove that there must be an external
creator
and an eternal creator.
Eternal creator.
Now, Ibn Taymiyyah and many of the Muslim theologians said that this is wrong, because if you say that T1 is caused by T2, then T1 will not exist until
T2 has already existed before. Sure.
But T2 will not exist until T3 exists, and so on, T4, T5, T4. So they said that there is in fact no series. This is, there is nothing. So if, but the fact is that there is something.
Mm-hmm.
There is something.
Mm-hmm.
So this cannot be the case, because if every temporal thing was caused by another temporal thing, and so on, then there would have been no temporal things at all. Can I repeat it again?
Please. No. Do we have a graph for this, I think?
Yes.
We do, I believe. We do have a graph for this that we'll be showing to our viewers as the Sheikh is explaining this.
Now,
but Sheikh, if I understood you correctly, you said a temporal thing in itself cannot be, not the creator,
but... It must be caused. But it cannot cause itself.
Sure.
So it must be caused by something...
External
to it. If that something external is itself temporal, it will have to be
required that something else has caused it.
Now, in a book that I wrote in Arabic about this, I likened this to a poor person who is found to be in possession of $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
We say, you are a poor person. Where did you get this
money from?
He says, I got it from person two. But that person two is also poor.
Where did he get it from?
Where did you get from? Person three, who is also poor. So this will not, even if we go for 1,000 or 1,000,000 persons who are poor, that will not solve the problem where the $1 million
came from. Because they're all individually are not capable of...
No. So unless someone says, I robbed a bank or so, then that will solve the problem. But if the police is investigating the matter, he will not be convinced if every poor person refers him to another poor person or so on. So this is the same with these temporal things. Now, some of them didn't get the argument correctly. They said... as if the conclusion that the ultimate cause must be eternal, as if it is something arbitrary, that we just said that there must be an eternal thing.
Simply because this does not make sense.
No.
So let's...
No. No, they don't say this. If they said it doesn't make sense, well, that would be a good argument. Now, Ibn Taymiyyah said, we are saying that the existence of temporal things is itself a proof that there is an eternal thing.
Hmm.
Because these temporal things would not have existed at all if there was no eternal thing. So we are not just saying that there is a God and he is eternal and so on. We are proving his eternity By the existence of the temporal things himself. So our evidence for the existence of an eternal cause is the existence of temporal things.
Gotcha.
Now, he says that, this by the way they call infinite regress,
mm-hmm.
infinite regress. He said that a series like this can go to infinity if everyone was caused by the eternal cause. He's outside
this temporal.
He's outside this
line.
This chain. He's outside mm-hmm. the chain. He created this. Before it, he created this. Before it, he created this. Before it, he created this. There is no logical problem here.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the some. When a very famous physicist said, I have an alternative.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't need to go
this way, in a chain,
to infinity. Why not say, make it like a loop, he said. Say, E1 caused E2, E2 caused E3, E3 caused E4, E4 caused E1, which caused E2, which caused E3.
And now it becomes circular.
So there is no problem.
I'm sorry. Just if we can show this to our viewers as you're watching this with us as well there.
Yeah. E1 caused E2, E2 caused E3, E3 caused E4, E4 caused E1. Now, in my book I said, this cannot be the case, because let us go backward now. Let us go backward.
Okay.
Say, E1 was caused by, E1 would not have existed.
Had it not been for E4.
E4, and E4 would not have existed.
Had it not been for E3.
And same with E2, the same with E1. So, nothing exists.
Sure.
Now, if you say E1 caused E2, E2 caused E3, E3 caused E4, E4 caused E1.
That was already caused.
So E4 caused E1, but E4 it is itself the result of
E1, E2, and E3.
Yes. So, and this is a very famous physicist. He wrote a book called God and the New Physics. Mm. And in fact, it was his book that made me think of writing a book on physics and the existence of the Creator in Arabic, because I realized that there is very little physics in it. And I am not a physicist. I realized that he relies heavily on the ideas and the arguments of Western philosophers. And I am familiar with that. So I said to myself, why not write a book and give the ideas of the Muslim philosophers and theologians. And that's what I did. Many people in the West are not aware of this. They don't know that. And it is our mistake, in fact.
Our mistake meaning the...
They don't think that there are Muslim intellectuals, for example, like Ibn Taymiyyah, because they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know about him. They know about their own philosophers, and they think that these are the greatest minds and so on. So I think it is our mistake that people in the West don't know much about. I hope that Huda will
shed some light on these great Muslim philosophers. Sheikh, I'm sorry, if you just hold on to that thought, we would like to visit it again, and the fact that many people think that there was no contribution on the Muslims' part in either the refutation or counter-argument of these theories that are out there. With this, we will take a short break and we will come back. Please stay tuned and we will see you shortly.
to enjoy their time? Do you want them to benefit from their time? Would you like to increase their knowledge in Islam and general culture?
Honesty, Brother Frisco.
Yes!
Whoa! How should you choose your friend?
And they should have lots and lots of toys! Yes!
A show consists of challenges, questions. No. The two teams with the most points at the end of the show that win the lovely golden medal. Or, if you come in second place, of course, you win a lovely silver medal. The winning team overall gets a lovely golden medal.
I'm very excited I did it. I didn't believe that I could do it.
Do you like to teach them the Islamic values? Would you like to get to know our puppet Frisco?
It's a good day today.
Join our program, Kids Quiz, to have more knowledge and fun.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome back again to the intersection of faith and reason with our beloved guest, Dr. Ja'far Sheikh Idris. Dr. Ja'far, you were talking earlier about Muslims and our fault in the fact that we have not exposed great thinkers like Ibn Taymiyyah and Imam al-Ghazali to the Western philosophy, either in refuting or counter-arguing these arguments. I wonder what could be done.
What could be done? People like you should write about. You are living in the West. You study the works of these people. Some of the Orientalists did this, but they did not write popular books. And some of them Orientalists were not themselves philosophers, so they did not popularize the ideas of the Muslim philosopher, because there are many ideas. People will wonder that some of the ideas that they attribute to some of the philosophers were expressed by Muslim philosophers
way back then.
Well, before them, a long time before them. And one of the things that I realized, something I found very strange, that the ideas of contemporary philosophers on what some of the Greek philosophers say, their criticism of Greek philosophy, is very much like the criticism of the Sunni theologians. You see, the non-Sunni theologians followed the Greeks and defended some of their views. Contemporary Western philosophers discovered that some of these ideas were fallacious. They criticized them. And so the nearest people, the nearest Islamic ideas about philosophy to Western philosophy are these ideas of the Sunnis, not the Mu'tazilite or the other groups. And some of them wonder when I studied in London School of Economic and Social Sciences, and there was a very famous professor of philosophy called Popper, and he had an idea of which he was very proud. He used to say, "It is wrong to say, as some of the Greeks said, that knowledge starts with definitions. Before you talk, you must define your words." And he used to say, "This cannot be so, because if I define my words, I have to define them in other words. And then if you ask me to define each of the, say I used five words, each of the five words, that would be 25 words. And then each of the 25 words, so...
And it go on forever.
So I went and told him. I didn't want to embarrass him and tell him in front of people. So I told him that we had a very famous Muslim theologian who said the same thing a long time ago. And Ibn Taymiyyah said, the knowledge does not start with definitions, because to define you have to know. That was his argument. To define,
you'd have to know.
You have to know. So knowledge is before definitions. And I didn't want to embarrass him, but he embarrassed me. He said, "I don't know anything about Ibn Taymiyyah. This is your fault. why don't you write about your people?" And so on. So what you said is true.
Is there much lost because of this?
No?
Is there much that is lost because of these ideas not getting exposed to the people out there?
Lost in what sense?
Lost meaning that the ideas of Ibn Taymiyyah, al-Ghazali, and their likes, the fact that they're not being exposed, people are not getting familiar with them.
They are not lost. They are in books. But in fact, many Muslims don't know much about them, because we are not very much concerned about it. Of course, in the Muslim world, we are concerned mostly about practical, since you have been colonized, you want to free ourselves from communism, we have dictatorship, we have this. So there isn't much time for pure intellectual matters like that. But if a Western philosopher reads Ibn Taymiyyah or so, he will find himself at home. And I have, an experience like this. One professor of philosophy visited us in the University of Khartoum, and he asked me, I gave one of the students something near distinction, but slightly less. He said, why don't you invite him and argue and discuss this matter with him and give him these two or three marks. And please make it in English. The course was in Arabic. Hmm. And I invited him. This man is now the Minister of the Interior, Dr. Zubair Bashir.
Did he give him the marks?
Yes, we started talking. Al-Ghazali, Popper, Ibn Taymiyyah, Kant, he was very impressive.
The visit, or the student?
The student was very impressive. And when we finished, and he went out, he said, "Of course you give him the And another colleague was also in the Department of Philosophy, was British, and he said that the thing that he learned, the most valuable thing that he learned by being in the Sudan and in that department, is that he said that the human mind is the same. Mm. We in the West sometimes think, in fact, some people in the West used to think that even logic is something Western.
Interesting.
And a famous Orientalist like Montgomery Watt said something about the Arabs, that for them, contradictions don't mean any much. In fact, if there are contradictions, this is a sign of richness, and so on. And of course, this is totally wrong. So it is, I think, to some extent, it is our mistake. Now, can we go? We're talking about the cosmological argument.
Yes, we are.
And I said that I presented what I thought was the correct formulation of the argument. But there are wrong formulations. Some of them are very famous. For example, someone says, everything has a cause. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then the atheist, you say, well, if everything has a cause, then God has a cause. Mm-hmm. Because God is something. Mm-hmm. And he's right. If you say everything has a cause, God is something, then he must have
a beginning, a cause.
A cause, so... that destroys your argument. The correct thing is to say And every event has a cause, or every temporal thing has a cause. Not everything has a cause, because an eternal thing doesn't have a cause. If something is eternal, this means that it depends for its existence on itself. And that's what is called in Quranic terminology, Qayyum. Qayyum, they say, who is self-sufficient. He doesn't need something from outside himself to depend on.
And this is one of the attributes of God.
Yes.
That are mentioned in the Quran.
Now, Ibn Taymiyyah said about the cosmological argument, as I said earlier, that it doesn't go far enough. Because the only thing that it proves is that there must be an eternal cause.
It points out, generally speaking, but it does not specify.
Yes, and in fact, what he said was, the same thing was said by some Western philosophers who criticized the cosmological argument. Some of them said, then, yes, okay, the conclusion is that there must be an eternal cause. Why should that be God?
Sure.
Yeah. Why can't it be this or that? Now, in my book, I said that we can go from that conclusion of the cosmological argument to the other attributes of the Creator. So the cosmological argument will be a first step.
To lead to pointing out directly to God.
So this means that in this I am not totally in agreement with Ibn Taymiyyah. Because Ibn Taymiyyah says that it doesn't go far enough. Perhaps he meant what I have just said, that it proves that there is an eternal thing. But then I said that we can go, and I will prove this. It goes from, we make the conclusion of the cosmological argument as
an introduction, first step,
yes,
to talk more about
the other attributes. And if we can prove that those attributes cannot be had by anything except whom they call the God of religion, then we have proved the existence of the Creator.
Sheikh, this is getting better and better, and time keeps going faster and faster by as this argument is getting there. So inshallah, with this we would come to the end of this episode of our program, hoping that you would join us again next time, as we will be talking about the attributes of God as presented in the Quran. With this, we say, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu, and so long.